are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, this is Andy Kamenetsky, co-host of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Want to let you know right off the top that today's show brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need, visit rockauto.com. Tell them Locked On sent you. Really excited to bring on today's guest, Justin Tinsley, whose work I've really enjoyed and admired for a long time. He's a senior culture and sports writer at ESPN's The Undefeated, one of the best out there in this space. And he is the host and writer and part of a great new project, The King of Crenshaw, an audio documentary podcast series, part of ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast series with The Undefeated. The first episode dropped yesterday, Monday. Part two comes out today. There's going to be episodes all week. Really happy to have him here. Justin, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. And thank you for having me on. It's been a long time coming, right?
It has been a while, man. It's definitely been a while. There's a lot to get into this with Nipsey in terms of basketball, in terms of LA, just his influence on culture. But just to begin, what prompted you to get involved with this project and spearhead? I know you've written a lot about Nipsey in general, but just what was it about his relationship with basketball, the NBA, his life in general, you just found so compelling?
Well, and I get into it a little bit on the podcast. You hear a little bit about this in episode one. But one of my really good friends, one of my best friends in the whole world, his name is Brian Robinson. And we went to college together at Hampton University in Virginia. And we stayed right next door to each other. And so we found out we were big music fans. And he would always come over to my dorm to listen to my dorm room, rather, and listen to the new music that I would download. Lord knows how many computers and laptops I went through in college downloading all those viruses, but it was worth it. It got me to this point. And he was the first person I'd ever met from LA, and he was the one who originally put me on to Nipsey. So fast forward maybe well over a decade, this is 2018, I'm actually getting off the train at Union Station here in DC, and I was listening to Victory Lap, which is of course Nipsey's debut album, the one that was nominated for a Grammy, and that was my favorite album at the time. And he called me and I was like, what's up? And he was like, well, my homegirl, she works with Nipsey over at Atlantic Records. And, you know, they're trying to get him some coverage, trying to think of some authentic and natural coverage, not just, oh, here's Nipsey at a basketball game, post his picture. What can we do to try to get him some authentic and genuine coverage in a sports vertical? And I was like, yo, this is great. I would love, because I knew Nipsey was really close with a lot of guys in the NBA, of course, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Isaiah Thomas, DeMar DeRozan, all those type of guys. I was like, well, it seems like it's a deeper connection there than just oh, let me take a picture with this guy before or after the game and post it on Instagram. What's the story there? And so we came up with the pitch. They took it back to Nipsey. And from what was told to me, he liked the idea. We wanted to flesh it out a little bit more, but he liked the idea and we wanted to get it on camera. 2018, Nipsey's super busy. I wasn't exactly twiddling my thumbs either, but it, unfortunately, man, it's just one of those situations where the funny thing about time, you always think you have more of it. We didn't get it done this year. We'll get it done, in 2019 sometime. Right. And, unfortunately, Nipsey's life ended the way that it did. And I knew all throughout his career, he would always preach about the marathon, seeing things through, understanding that there are going to be tough times and obstacles that you have to overcome. And Brian told me, he was like, this is just Nipsey's way of telling you, you have to finish the idea. You have to do this. And that's, in a nutshell, that's how this story came to be.
How do you think being from LA influenced Nipsey's love of basketball?
I mean, you just said it, being from LA, no disrespect to the Clippers or anybody like that. You grow up with the Lakers, man. And the Lakers are such a, they're international.
You're not going to offend anybody with this audience, I'm not gonna offend Justin, anybody. I promise you. You're fine. if anything, you just got a few more downloads. So you're
well, look, I appreciate that. But I mean, like you said, the Lakers, he grew up in a town where the Lakers are. the Lakers are such an international brand, but in LA, like the Lakers are, again, you don't need me to tell you this. Your listeners don't need me to tell them this, but they're a religion. Like you grow up,
yeah.
Obviously he was born in 85. So he didn't remember the Showtime Lakers in a sense, but like you grew up in LA. So it's kind of like you saw him regardless. Cause he grew up in that area. So obviously, and then when he's 10 or 11, Shaq and Kobe come to the Lakers, and then he was coming of age during the three-peat. Like, basketball is just intrinsically, like, infused within the culture of LA. Like, you can't think of LA and not think of basketball. And not even just the Lakers or professional basketball, the Sparks. Like, it's like Venice Beach. You got the neighborhood parks. Like,
Drew League.
Yeah, Drew League. Like, so basketball is such a – it's an irreplaceable part of LA culture that it was impossible for him not to gravitate towards it in some shape or form.
How often did he play growing up? Do you know?
Oh man. And this actually didn't make the podcast. Cause of course I want to put everything into it, but it would have been a 90 hour podcast. Had I had it my way. We have probably one of the more powerful, I would venture to say the most powerful interview I've ever done in my career is actually on this podcast. It's with Nipsey's older brother, Samuel Askedom. Everyone knows him as Black Sam. And he would tell me about how Nipsey, he was just the most, like young Nipsey. He was still Ermius at this point. Long before rap, he was like, well, Nipsey was the most competitive basketball player that he's ever seen. Like Nipsey was that type of guy. If he lost, he would kick the ball over the fence, and Sam would be like, well, I guess we're not playing for another 2 days because we got to get another ball. But he was one of those he loved basketball. I don't know if he ever thought he was going to go pro, but he was such a scientist in everything he did. And Sam told me another great story about how when one of his favorite players, I guess it was everybody's favorite player or one of their favorite players growing up, Allen Iverson. So when Iverson crossed Jordan that time, Nipsey went straight to the basketball court to try to perfect that crossover. And he did. And he used it on really? People at the playground, at the park. And so growing up in South LA, the weather's always good. You can play 12 months out of the year. So Nipsey was, he was a hooper. He was
okay. Good. I was going to say, do you have a scouting report on Nipsey? Like,
okay,
know, what kind of player he was?
Yeah, I have. So from what Sam told me was he would get in your face on defense. He wasn't one of those guys that would like basically cherry pick. He would get in your face on defense. And although Nipsey was he was a laid back guy on the court, it was like a different type of thing. So he would get in your face and he'd talk if he needed to. They said he had a good jump shot, and he didn't mind driving to the basket. So I mean he was somebody you wanted on your team, at least according to what people have told me about his game.
So Nipsey Hussle, two-way player.
Yeah, Nipsey Hussle, two-way player. And he talked trash like the glove. He liked to shoot like Stephen Clay. Okay. And he would drive to the basket like DeMar, I guess.
speaking of DeMar, he's among the guys that you hear from the NBA in this series. DeMar is obviously a Compton native. You also hear from DeMarcus Cousins, Isaiah Thomas. Yep. About the importance of Nipsey and where they drew inspiration from him. We've seen a lot since his passing, just from NBA players, just how much he meant to them and that influence. Actually, when we come back, I got a few more questions about that in terms of Nipsey's relationship with NBA players. And then I want to start getting into just what he meant to Los Angeles in general, where I know a lot of our listeners are either from or live in now and know really well. So I think they're going to be really interested in that. So we will talk about that coming up next.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Sweatblock. There are a few things in life that just aren't fun to talk about. And one of them is excessive sweating. Like when you're sweating through your shirts for no reason, it's unsightly, it's embarrassing. I don't want to have to worry about that. So that's why I use Sweatblock antiperspirant wipes. They're stronger, more effective than most clinical antiperspirants. Just apply Sweatblock at night before bedtime. Next morning, wake up, wash. Go about your daily day without having to worry about sweat. Use it once or twice a week. Stay dry the whole time. Guaranteed or your money back. No more pit stains. No more worrying about the clothes you got to pick specifically because they will hide the sweat better. Put it this way. If you know another sweat solution that is doctor created, doctor recommended, featured on Rachel Ray's show, tested by firefighters, I'm listening. But until then, check out Sweatblock. Get it today for 20% off at sweatblock.com with the promo code LOCKEDON or at Amazon or CVS. Locked On Lakers also brought to you by Bet Online. As always, Bet Online, your number one spot for all your pro and college football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL survivor contest open now at Bet Online. Head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, receive a 100% welcome bonus. That is insane. Take advantage of their opening day, the Super Promo, on Thursday, September 9th, the NFL season opener between the Super Bowl champion Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. If you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up using the promo code NFL100. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, from football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait. Take advantage of all the great offers available for the 2021 season. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Remember the promo code Locked On. Okay, so Justin, in the press release for the King of Crenshaw, it mentions that Nipsey was someone that, quote, athletes look to for motivation, not only to prepare for games, but also his dedication to living a life of respect and principle that resonated with them. How would you describe, either from your perspective or Nipsey's perspective, NBA players' perspective, whatever, what a life of respect and principle means?
Nipsey had one of the things he was most proud of throughout his entire life, especially when it came to music, was that he never told a lie. Like he said, if I say anything in my music, you can go basically fact check it. And I've done it, good, bad, and indifferent. He was like, I'm not saying this to earn like a medal of freedom or anything, but if you listen to his music, and really if you listen to his interviews, one of the foundational pillars of his life, his existence, his mantras was always about respect. And always showing that, like, how I got here, I didn't shortchange anything. I didn't cheat anybody out of anything. I'm a man of principle. I'm a man of respect. It's not to say that he didn't slip up along the way, because the next perfect person I meet in life will also be the first perfect person I meet in life. So it's not to say that he didn't, again, have his hurdles or self-imposed mistakes along the way, because he did. But Nipsey always saw that, like, if I treat people with respect, regardless if they're from my neighborhood, if they're from a different neighborhood, if I treat them like a man, if I treat them like a woman, then that type of energy will reciprocate on me and I can continue to pour that type of energy out into the world. And it's hard not to respect somebody whose foundational roots are based in those type of principles, because it's so easy to deviate from that and just in our day-to-day lives. But Nipsey, with what he preached in his music and what he preached outside the booth, for these NBA players, you hear, you know, you've been around the game so much your entire life, and you kind of been insulated with the game your entire life. And I think with Nipsey, it was kind of like a breath of fresh air. Like, you know, this guy, he doesn't want anything from me. He's not trying to get tickets to the game, or, you know, wants to pitch me on, you know, this opportunity that sounds sketchy. It was like, no, I respect you. I respect the work that goes into your craft, and I enjoy what you do. And I respect the fact that, you know, we're alike in a lot of ways, both young black men trying to, you know, make it in a world where there's so many hurdles thrown our way that you survived all of this to achieve your dream. And honestly, I'm doing it as well. So that there was that respect factor. And Nipsey treated, you know, LeBron James the same way he would treat the guy out front of the Marathon store emptying the trash. And, you know, if you talk to people who knew him, that's how he was. And it's hard, it's impossible not to respect somebody who lives by those principles and that code of conduct.
I want to talk now about just what Nipsey meant to this city, Los Angeles. Cool. And you can see this basketball court that was created in Hyde Park at Creed Academy. It was obviously in Nipsey's honor, and he had, I believe, helped renovate the court. The more you started learning about him, like what did you learn that, like, specifically ways that he meant to LA that you might not have recognized or assumed in the beginning?
That's a really good question, because I knew he was a big deal in LA. I used to listen to him. I mean, I've been listening to him pretty much since 2006, 2007 mm-hmm. when my boy Brian put me on. So I understood his story. I knew what he was doing. I knew what he was trying to accomplish. But when you sit with the project every day for a year and like hours a day, like really no days off, of course you learn something. And I knew he was a big deal in LA. And, you know, look, we're in sports. We both love music. We were talking about that, but, you know, before the show.
Yeah.
Word icon gets thrown around a lot. And it's kind of like the word classic in music. Like, oh, the album came out 20 minutes ago. It's a classic. Like, wait a minute, break. And so icon gets thrown around a lot. Like, I knew he was a legend. I knew that. I knew that while he was alive. But I did not realize just how much that legendary status crossed over into iconic status, especially in LA. In LA, right. You know, in particular in LA. And it's just like, this guy meant so much to so many people in so many different ways. Like, there may be a section of people over here who were really inspired by his music. There's a section of people over here who were really inspired that, like, this man built a store and kept it in his neighborhood and kept the money circulating throughout his neighborhood. And then you see other people, other artists from South LA doing the same thing in their respective neighborhoods. Like, this guy, he left a blueprint for what Black empowerment looks like. So when we talk about these great figures, these great, you know, Black American figures in history, again, I'm not going to compare them to anybody, but like, we have to put Nipsey Hussle in that category, because he didn't just give ideas for what to do. He actually put ideas in place and plans for action. So what did I learn? This dude is an icon, and he always will be.
Speaking of icons, there's, you know, it's tragic, but there is an intersection between Nipsey and Kobe. In terms of their deaths and what they both meant to Los Angeles, to the NBA communities, all of that. And want to explore some of that next, as well as Nipsey's just overarching legacy. So we'll talk about that coming up next. Locked On Lakers brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models out there, it is impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. And why would you spend 30%? 50%, 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new car dealership anyway, dummy. You can get it for far less at rockauto.com. For example, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump, $353 from a chain store. That's only $216 at rockauto.com. They are a family business. They've been serving auto part customers online for 20 years. Whether it's for a classic or a daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, so As I mentioned, Justin, there's this, you know, connection point between Kobe's death and Nipsey's death, and this, you know, shocking reminder of what both of them really meant to Los Angeles. And the day of Kobe's death, the Grammys were being held that night. I remember I was in LA Live, and, you know, where the ceremony is being held for the Grammys, and the entire plaza had been shifted into this makeshift shrine to Kobe, and guys like, you know, YG, John Legend, Meek Mill, they had modified performances dedicated to Nipsey to also include Kobe, you know, as part of the celebrations and tributes. Are there commonalities that you see with Nipsey and Kobe, like specifically just in the way that they're loved so much by Los Angeles specifically? I mean, they've been memorialized. There's murals often with the two of them together, you know, across Los Angeles.
Yeah, you know, you told your story of where you were from when Kobe passed. I was in LA because I was covering the Grammys. I'm working on a story about Nipsey getting his first Grammys.
Right.
So I'm literally in Staples Center, and she was my girlfriend at the time. She's now my wife. She sent me a text message, and all the text message just said was Kobe? And I'm like, What do you do? You know, like, what's going on? And I literally, I'm typing at my computer, typing my story, and I look up, and I lie to you not. I almost said something else. I didn't want to curse, but like, I lie to you not. It was like a domino effect of people just saying, "Oh,
yeah,
oh, it was like what?"
I had the exact same thing happening to me.
It was one of the most surreal. I have goosebumps right now just recounting that. And so, my best friend in the world, his name's Brad. You know, we grew up. And he's been a diehard Kobe fan since, you know, Kobe first got to the Lakers in 96. He knew I was a big LeBron fan. So he, for a long time, he would chide me about 5-0, 5-0. Like, your man's never going to get one. But he was the biggest, he was the first person I thought of when I got it. And I lied to you not, man. I leave the press room in Staples Center, and there was like a little hallway as to where you could see the main, where the court was. And I looked out there, and it was the retired jerseys. And I don't know if they had just did it or if it was just fate or destiny. The only two jerseys that you can see that were lit up were 8 and 24.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that was by design.
And maybe they had just did it. But when I walked out there, I turned to the right, and there they were. So I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, this city hasn't even really recovered from Nipsey Hussle's death.
Yeah.
And then you lose somebody like a Kobe Bryant, having this conversation with you right now, it still doesn't feel real. Like,
I've said this many times. It still feels weird to me that,
yes,
that Kobe's gone. Like, beyond the sadness of it, beyond the tragedy of it, it's just weird. It's really one of those odd
forces,
yeah,
that it just felt like I would see him 40 years from now the way Bill Russell is right now. Like, yeah, this regal, you know, elderly figure who helped, you know, facilitate the game through so many different generations. Like, it still feels weird to me to refer to Kobe Bryant in the past tense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I definitely want to make sure that I realize that there were 9 lives that were lost in that helicopter crash.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are families who will never be the same again. Rest in peace to Gianna Bryant as well. But that day, I just remember thinking, like, yo, this city, they haven't gotten over Nipsey yet. And you mean to tell me they lose this basketball, again, here's this word, you lose this basketball icon who played for 20 years for this franchise, and he experienced every emotion in a Lakers uniform, up, down, good, bad, indifferent. Like, I need to get the hell out of here. I can't ever see myself leaving. It was just like a normal relationship in a lot of ways. Like, But those two guys, in their own ways, represented so much of what the culture of Los Angeles looked like. You know, like, I think a lot when people look at LA from like the outside looking in, like, oh, it's Hollywood, like everybody there, yeah, you know, they go to brunch every day.
It's such a small part of this city. Like, I mean, it really is.
It's such a small part. And like, Kobe's tenacity, his,
yes,
greatness represented so much of what that city's lifeline is.
Most of Hollywood, I mean, like, if you look at the power base, is obviously the power base, and that is the one percenters, yeah, in this city, obviously. But if you look at what makes up Hollywood as a whole in its entirety, it's a lot of grinders.
Like, yeah,
it is a lot of grinders, whether you're talking about the people that actually put up the productions, talking, mm-hmm, about the people on craft services, whether you're talking about, yeah, the people that are just coming up. Like, there's, mm-hmm, a lot more grinding to it. And, you know, whatever you thought of Kobe, that element of grind cannot be denied. And that was there with Nipsey as well.
I mean, you look at the same way I talk about Nipsey and the marathon, like, there's no real difference between the marathon continues and what Kobe dubbed Mamba mentality. Both of, mm-hmm, them are all about hard work. Both of them are about understanding that, like, whatever you want out of life, whether you want to be the greatest chef in the world, whether you want to be the greatest school teacher in the world, whatever your passion is, if you want to be great at your passion, it's going to require work, and it's going to require you probably falling on your face more often than not. But if you stick with it, then whatever it is you want will pay off in the end. That's what TMC is all about, and that's what Mamba mentality is all about. So they're the same.
It's interesting you say that too, because I remember there was a really good piece in the LA Times by a writer, her name's Erica Smith, mm-hmm, about, yep, about one of the commonalities between Kobe and Nipsey and their legacies. And part of it is that there's a messiness to both of their legacies, you know, with Nipsey, you know, having as a teenager joined the Rolling 60s and, you know, having those gang ties that he eventually left. But, you know, that is a messy part of his past. Kobe, obviously, there was the sexual assault accusation, the very public trial, even turbulence that happened on the court with him. And it makes it complex, but that imperfection is, I think, what a lot of people can draw from just in a human way. And again, it's not to try to downplay the seriousness of with either of them, what, you know, that messiness, but both of them were able to move through it and show that you could not necessarily be defined by it, even if you don't ever completely leave it or that people don't forget about it. And, you know, they shouldn't forget.
But it's still
there. And, and you still can serve as an inspiration point or still serve in positive ways, despite having those parts of your past that don't go away. And again, shouldn't go away.
Absolutely. I mean, they shouldn't go away. Those are very necessary and important conversations to have about both legends. And just in particular with Nipsey, since, you know, we're talking about this podcast, he never, and this was one of my favorite facets about who he was as a person. And I think it's one of the most important facets about who he was as a person that you mentioned his Rolling 60s Crips affiliation. He never shied away from talking about that. He never was like, oh, I don't want to talk about that part of my life. He was, if anything, he was very open to talk about that because he wanted to break the nuance of what, you know, being a gang member actually was. And we have an entire episode dedicated towards that. It's episode 2. It's called Where You From? And, you know, we were talking about the titles for these episodes. And I think that's a very important, I mean, obviously all the episodes are very important, but in terms of really understanding the nuance and not basing everything off stereotypes of what you hear about, you know, gang life and gang culture, he always broke gang culture conversations down in a way that I haven't heard a lot of people do. Like, yes, there are definitely the negative realities, the negative stereotypes and the negative connotations that come with gang life. But with Nipsey, it was just more like, when you grow up in these communities, it's not like, you know, your mom takes you to the local rec center and you sign up for like little league football or something like that. You walk outside, you walk to the store, you see this. And this is, you know, for a lot of young kids in these situations, like, it's appealing in a lot of ways. If it's like a sense of family, if your family structure at home isn't the greatest in the world, like he spoke about this and he broke this down in ways that I haven't heard a lot of people do. And I think with episode 2, that will answer a lot of those questions or, you know, peel back a lot of layers that need to be talked about. But yes, like you said, with both Kobe and Nipsey, you have to talk about the entire story because you can't leave. You can't, you know, when you talk about Kobe Bryant, you have to bring up the sexual assault allegation because that's a very important part of his story. Now, when you do, you have to bring it with nuance and integrity and just understand how these conversations evolve over time. How we spoke about it 6 months ago may not be how we speak about it right now. So yes, you have to talk about the entire story and not just cherry pick the parts that you want or that you feel will put them in the best light.
You mentioned the titles of the episodes, and the one that comes out, I believe it's Wednesday, is called Songs in the Key of Life, and it's a reference to one of Stevie Wonder's best-known, most critically acclaimed albums. And knowing how big of a music geek you are, that does not feel like a coincidence in any way. And, you know, that is an album that has had an incredible amount of influence, you know, Stevie has as well, not, you know, in culture in general. What do you see as Nipsey's influence in both of those spheres, as a music influencer, but also as a cultural influencer? And do you think he's somebody that over time will be seen in that type of light and space as a Stevie Wonder?
Here's the thing. Like,
it's hard to know.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Stevie Wonder is probably the greatest musician in my eyes to ever live. you know, the great, you know, objectively speaking.
You can make a very strong argument. Yeah,
and I don't think anyone would be mad at that choice. Like, I can talk all day about Stevie Wonder as well. I don't know if he'll ever be again. I don't know. I have no clue what's going to happen 20 years from now, and I'm pretty sure Nipsey wouldn't want me to compare him to Stevie.
I ask in part because I think with music, trying to predict influence is a really interesting process. Because there are musicians that you think are going to be more relevant in the time that turn out not to be as much. And then there are others that end up way more influential. Their music holds up better than you would have expected in the moment too.
I think, and it's great that you say that. I think over time, we see it now. Like a lot of people know who Nipsey Hussle is. They've gone back and listened to his music. And I think, that's only going to increase over time. You know, like they're going to be a younger generation of kids that are coming up. They may be in elementary, middle school right now. It's like, oh, let me go back and listen to what Nipsey Hussle was saying. And, you know, he may take on a Tupac and Biggie type, like, over time, you know, because, you know, at the time, like, Tupac and Biggie were 25 and 24 when they died. Yeah. You know, like, Biggie, like, if Tupac would have lived, he would have turned 50 in June. You know, just 50 years old. So I think over time, not even just Nipsey's music, but like you said, from a cultural perspective and like what he was trying to do in his neighborhood in terms of just human rights and just philanthropy and entrepreneurship, I think that's going to allow him to grow in ways that, you know, maybe even other artists haven't had that, because there's so many entry points to talk about Nipsey Hussle, and it doesn't just have to be just music. And also, I just do want to say all the episodes drop Monday. So you can... Benjamin, okay. We do have a fifth episode, a bonus episode that drops Monday, August 30th. So, but episodes 1 through 4, you can listen to them straight through if you want.
Okay, that is a great clarification point, and I'm glad that you mentioned that because I misunderstood that. So, thank you for making sure that's clear. Go into binge mode, people.
Yeah, please do.
Do it. The last thing I wanted to ask about too is like the irony with, you know, that chapter being called "Songs in the Key of Life," given. Yeah. How much attention there's been towards Nipsey after his death and, you know, what that tragedy has meant to his overall legacy. Does his music hit differently to you now, like, or feel thematically different now, like in an overarching way, posthumously?
Yeah, man. You know, I think it does whenever, you know, an artist leaves, but with Nipsey in particular, man, he'll say certain things in a song that, you know, while he was here, you're like, man, that's a hard line. I really like that line. But then you'll hear it like now, you're like, damn, man, like he's not here anymore. Like he's really not here. Like one of my favorite songs by him was Higher, the DJ Khaled song with he and John Legend. Mm-hmm. And when you hear lines in that song, he was like, Monty turned 10, obviously being his daughter, Monty turned 10, Cross turned 2. I'm starting to see this life from a bird's view. And I'm like, wow, like, you know, and then he'll close out the second verse. He says, I can't remember how the lyric actually goes verbatim. For whatever reason, I can't call it off the top of my head. But he was like, all these things that can go wrong in South Central and look at my fate. And, you know, it's just like, wow, man. And it really feels like that was the song that was playing, like when the pearly gates opened up for him, you know. That's what it feels, and a lot of his music feels like that.
When you take into account how he literally died, the location of where, I mean, that's it's really strong. Yeah. I mean, it's really,
it's
sadly powerful.
I mean, he spoke a lot of things into existence, man. Like he always understood that how his life ended was a possibility. He knew the environment that he came from. He talked about it in music, like. You're like, damn right, I like the life I built. I'm from West Side 60s. I might get killed. You know what I mean? He says that in songs. Like, and it's just like hearing Tupac talk about it or any other artist talk about it. But, you know, you mentioned episode 3, Songs in the Key of Life. Like, one of my favorite songs by Nipsey is the song called Ocean Views. And in the third verse, he was like, play Stevie Wonder at my funeral. And then Stevie Wonder sang at his funeral. You know? So it's... it's heavy, man. Like he understood the concept of life and death. And again, one of the most powerful things we could ever do is like leave a legacy that speaks for us, even when we're not here. And, you know, I wish he was still here to build upon that legacy, but he did a lot within the 33 years that he was allotted.
The series is called The King of Crenshaw. It's part of ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast series with the undefeated. As Justin clarified, Justin Tinsley, binge the hell out of it. It is an option. Please. You can do that.
Please.
This was great, man. Thank you very much. Like I said, I have always loved your work. I always love talking with you, man. So thank you.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me back on. I got to get back on here once the season starts, man. Like, we got to see what happens with these Lakers.
You're in, man. You're here. So
appreciate
we'll make it happen.
Absolutely.